Hey, Don, I just got back from a run before we started this podcast, and I ran in the Graves short today. And I gotta say, I only have one pair of Graves, and I think I like them the best.
Is that right?
Yeah, the reason why I like them is they have the zippered side pockets, and that zippered side pocket fits my oversized iPhone perfectly. I can put it in there, get to it very easily, and it doesn't bounce around. It just fits it perfectly.
How about that stretch in the material as you're climbing up a big step? Do you notice how they just kind of move with you instead of holding you back?
It's almost like you're naked.
Well, that's why you ran alone this morning, Scott, because you have those kind of thoughts. Me, I didn't run. So I put on my more casual path projects, the Brim.
The Brim.
They have a button at the top. Certainly you could run in them because the material has all those great qualities that stretch in the fabric that works. But they're a piece that they're called chino style, and there you can get out there and just look like you belong, whether it's at the mall or the or wherever you're at. They just work.
Yeah, they look pretty nice on you.
Well, that's another reason you ran by yourself. But if it's shorts or it's a jersey top or it's a cool hat.
They have the new Path logoed shirts available now, too.
And I forgot to mention, Scott, they've got some sale on some of these, the Brim,
yeah.
The one that I'm comfortable in. They're on sale right now.
$10 off. Yeah, so go to pathprojects.com, or you can always link up by going to our partners page, click on the Path Projects banner.
You'll love them as much as we do, promise.
Okay. Harrys.com/TRN, we're going to tell you about the deal they have for you in just a minute.
Hey, Harry's founders, we're just two regular guys, kind of like you and I, Scott. We're pretty regular, and they were getting tired of ripped off and paying overpriced for gimmicks.
You know, it's crazy how expensive razors are.
Well, they can be, but not for Harry's razors.
At Harry's, you can get a quality, durable blade at a fair price. Just under $2 a blade. That's pretty inexpensive.
Well, it's a great price, and they have great offers, especially this one.
You can, if you go to harrys.com/TRN, you can refresh your wallet and your face. You can get a weighted ergonomic handle that's really kind of feels good in your hand. It's not like those disposable handles.
A 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and a trimmer blade, which you like, Scott.
I love that trimmer blade.
For a close shave.
Rich lathering shave gel. That smells awesome.
And a travel blade, so something to cover up that blade so you don't reach in and rummage around and end up with a shaved into your index finger.
Yeah. If you go to harrys.com/TRN, you can get that deal for a very good price.
It's the best. You'll love it. We use it, and we hope that you will too. harrys.com/TRN.
Yeah, thank you, Don. You know, I mean, I didn't know what it was going to be like. You know, you sound like a nice guy on this podcast, but...
But I know it's on the upper edge, and you guys have won a couple of awards, and...
I've never prepped for a podcast, ever.
Oh, that's what you're doing.
What, are you balancing your checkbook over there, H.A.W.? What's going on?
Yeah.
You're recording this, aren't you, Freeman?
I get everything. All right, are we ready?
Yeah.
Thanks for joining.
Welcome to another edition of Trail Runner Nation. I'm Don Freeman.
I'm Scott Warr. Hey, and we have Tosh with us today. We are streaming our consciousness. I think that I've heard him say that many, many times.
You have, in fact, about 30 seconds ago you said that. So,
no, he says it on his podcast. Hey. I listened to him. He says, and today's, I'm just going to stream my consciousness. And it's just, I love your podcast, Tosh, because I don't know whether you have, I know you've thought about the topic, but I don't think you have a script. I think you just sit down and go, okay, hey, today I'm going to talk about flowers.
No, I think he puts weeks of preparation and thought into it.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think he writes anything down. I think he just occasionally, it pops back into his mind. It keeps popping into his mind and goes, that's a podcast. It takes, I would say, about 7 or 8 pops into your mind before it hits the radar for potential podcasts.
Is any of that true?
I would say you guys are bracketing quite well. I definitely don't write anything down or script it. I might take a couple notes here or there, and everything I talk about is just something that's on my mind or consumes me. Whether it's very intense in the moment over the past week, or it's something that just like Don's saying, keeps popping up in my head over and over. And I'm on a drive and I'm processing it, or I'm talking to, you know, Nicole, and we're processing it over dinner, and it's just constantly consuming me. And so I just I just get on the microphone and I just start talking. I mostly ramble, but it's all right. It feels good to me.
It's good rambling. If you want, we're talking to Brian Kontosh, and I'm going to give him a proper intro in just a moment. But Scott just got off the trail, comes rushing in, flies in the chair, and usually Scott's the one that keeps us organized. I'm the one that's kind of going off into outer space and starting the podcast in the middle of it, and Scott brings us back and says, hey, we should do an intro. We should talk about something, you know, to get these people on board with us. And today, the roles have reversed. My friend,
the podcast we're talking about, Brian's podcast, is called Crooked Butterfly, and if you haven't subscribed, you need to. They're what, 20-30 minute stream of consciousnesses and a good thinking podcast.
If you want to climb into the head of Tosh, there's an opportunity, because I have a feeling the filter has been removed somehow. When you hit record, you just start talking and processing and thinking, and you call yourself out on some stuff, and you bring yourself in, and you redirect yourself. It's very interesting and addicting, because I, like you, Scott, I started playing, and I just kept listening to the next one and the next one and the next one, and finally I had to go out and do something because I was motivated. So, Tosh, thank you so much. Let me give the proper intro to Tosh. Many of you have heard him in the past on our podcast, because he's a great, great guy to talk to. He's a thought leader. He's intellectual, and he's just hardcore. And I just love him for that. I met Tosh at Tahoe 200. We were out there running it together.
Was that last year?
No, heck, it's been a few years now. I think it was 2016 or something, 17, back in the day.
Back in the day, 2 years ago.
Yeah, that's back in the day now. And we just started talking, and you become allies and colleagues with the people that you're around for a few days. And I had a great time with him. I learned later that he ran Tahoe 240. I was out there with him on that. But
Moab,
thank you very much. There's some people that were lost at Tahoe got the Tahoe 240.
That was when you took the wrong turn. It turned into Tahoe 240.
And I learned as we were out there, he was big into CrossFit, and he's big into leadership training. He's big into getting out there and do some national adventure racing. We need to know a little bit more about that, because I'm not doing it justice. But some national adventure racing teams. He goes over to different continents and gets a kayak and straps a pack on his back and a compass in his hands and joins a team of other tough people, and they go out and compete against other countries. And it's pretty fascinating. Is that even close to true?
Yeah, it sounds pretty good, Don.
Yeah. I think maybe it was our last podcast.
You know, you should throw in some just crap and see if he agrees to it.
Okay, let's test this one. He got inside of a shipping container for 24 hours, completely sensory deprivation. So lights off, sound off. He's just in there with a treadmill without a motor that he has to propel himself.
No GPS, no watch.
No phones, nothing, no music, not a clock, nothing, not a heart rate monitor. You're just there. Is that true?
That is absolutely true.
Well, I can't make up anything more than that.
No, you can't make something like that.
So I wanted to get in touch with Tosh after our first meeting out there at Tahoe. And so I go on, and we discovered we were both in the Marines. And I thought, well, this is a fellow Marine. I need to make sure that, you know, I don't look weak out here. And, you know, I try to raise my bar a little bit to keep up with this man. And so that's all I knew, that he was in the Marines. And so I wanted to get in touch with him, and I went on and I looked, trying to find his Facebook post, and all of a sudden I see a picture of him pop up with the Commandant of the Marine Corps pinning him with the Navy Cross. Now, the Navy Cross is a heroic and probably the very top honor that you can be awarded, and the Commandant is the senior officer of the Marine Corps, answers to the President. And then the next image I see, he's standing next to George W. Bush with this in a uniform. I'm thinking, Tosh never told me any of these things. Just a humble, humble man that is just fantastic. And that is a common thread throughout his life. And if you want to know something, you've got to find it out yourself, because Tosh isn't going to volunteer it. So we introduce him, and I thought, of the things I know, how many things don't I know? And there's probably plenty. So Tosh, thanks for joining the podcast. Do we have any time left for you?
Right, man. Hey, man, just thanks for having me. Every time you guys reach out, I get excited, because I'm big fans, and I think about our time back at Tahoe. In fact, I was looking at a photo of me with Katra at the party, after party, and I went back probably 15-20 minutes and just reminiscing of that time, and you're a big part of those reminiscing. So just thank you, man. I love you guys.
Hey, let's do it again. Easy to say, harder to do. So the podcast that we listened to that inspired us, all of them were good, but the one that really rang true for the moment that we were both listening to was Keep Up to Catch Up.
That's not right.
Wait, hold on.
It's easier to keep up than to catch up.
All right.
Yeah. Let's get the title right. So now it's your turn to talk, Tosh. Where did that come from?
Oh man, I don't know. I don't know where it came from. I'm excited to explore this with you guys because, you know, on my podcast, I just kind of go and I ramble and I babble like we talk about, and I just process out loud. And inevitably, when I get done recording the next day or the day after, or even hours after, I think like, oh man, I didn't talk about that, or I didn't say this, but that's okay. And so when you guys reached out to talk about this specific episode, it's like, cool, because now we can have dialogue and the questions you're going to ask are inevitably going to pin me to be a little bit more succinct or clear with my thoughts. And I'm excited. So where did it come up with? It came up early in my Marine Corps career. And I don't even think I didn't coin the phrase. It was some drill sergeant, some staff sergeant, some senior NCO, when I was a hoople head and having to do these forced marches, and it would be inevitably like somebody would start to fall back. We're on a formation march for 20 miles or something, and everybody's trying to keep up with each other and within 30 inches or so and keep unit integrity and all the disciplines that, you know, Marines are whatever. And so when somebody starts to fall back, move a little slower than everybody else, it just causes a lot of undue hardship on everybody behind. And then that person will say, oh crap, I'm falling back. So they do a little shuffle step to catch up. And then everybody behind them has to do another shuffle step. And the further back it goes, the faster the shuffle step is for the last person. And it's very, very similar to when you're in a traffic jam with cars and, you know, stop and go, stop and go, stop and go. Where if everybody just said, hey, let's go 5 miles an hour, we'll go continuous instead of stop and go. So usually the person at the very, very end of the formation is just jogging the entire 20 miles. And so you do not want to be in the back. The best place to be in a formation march is in the front, because you're barely walking, because you know that the speed is twice as fast in the back. And I was rarely one to fall back, you know, just whatever reason. But there was one time when I was falling back and there was a motivator behind me or something. Come on, man. It's easier to keep up than catch up. And that just stuck with me. I mean, this was early in my Marine Corps career. So, I mean, that stuck with me probably for 15 years or so. And it's true. It's just easier to keep up. You could be 10 feet behind somebody and you're both walking at 2.8 miles an hour and you're 10 feet behind. But why don't you just stay right behind them and walk the same pace? It's the same pace. But when you have to catch up to them because you're too far behind, now you got to go 3.5 miles an hour. And that spike in intensity is more fatiguing than it would have been if you would have just maintained the average. I mean, you can do all the physiology equations and astronomics or whatever it is to figure out that that's true. But like anytime you spike your intensity, there's a backlash. And depending on how high you spike your intensity, and now you're starting to mitigate the amount of time that you can endure across the long spectrum. So that's really where it came from. You know, it's easier to keep up than catch up. And it's true on a physical sense for sure.
I listened closely and took notes, Tosh, as we went through here. And one of my favorite things you said was, and this is a quote, I don't know if someone can put some equations for that. We're talking about that pace and we're talking about the numbers and the, you know, going 3.5 versus 2.8, all that stuff. I don't know if someone can put some equations for that, but I'm only mildly interested. It's like, yeah, you know, if you guys want to crunch those numbers, go ahead, but I'm really not that interested in it. I just love that stream of consciousness as you're recording this. You're thinking out loud, yeah, someone could put some equations, but I'm really not that interested in it. And you just keep going on with your observations.
And
yeah, it's weird. I think you know, I'm mildly interested because I know and I feel it to be anecdotally true. I've experienced it, and some people need to be validated with numbers and math and science, and I'm very mathematical. I mean, don't let me fool you, but it's like, yeah, hey, sometimes we get confused. confused by science. So why worry about it? It's just there. Just do it. I'm feeling this. I'm experiencing it. We don't have to add the science to it to just know that it's true and good and just. I mean, it's a function of faith anyways, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So one of the things that reasons we wanted to do this episode is because it relates to more than just keeping up in that formation. It relates to just your training. Mm. It relates to the trail race or the trail run itself, or it might just relate to life in general. There's financially or your relationship or anything that you have. It's better to keep up than catch up. And so I think that's where this conversation kicks off, and I think it'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah. I want to maybe even jump over the obvious metaphor that if you're in a conga line or if you're in a long race, to keep that perceived effort at a good maintenance level, mm-hmm. instead of doing the fartleks where you're running real fast and then slowing down and running real fast, I want to talk about to start about training. And you had a really good story that you mentioned during your podcast on this about the boxer that you trained. Do you mind recounting that?
Robert Guerrero, right?
Yeah, that's him. Yeah, it's cool. I think the physical world and what I do, I'm only finally starting to elevate from that in the last 5-10 years. Yeah, maybe 3 to 5 years, just to get it into my head in a philosophical type sense and see where it applies outside of the physical world to intellectual world, you know, my heart, my soul, my values. And I just try to draw all of these lessons from that plane into these other things to be a good person. And this keep up the catch up is definitely there in the mindset realm. And so, the Robert Guerrero story, professional boxer, I was tasked with training him for a follow-up fight after he lost to Mayweather. He fought Mayweather. This is a boxer, 5-time title, belt champ, something, don't know. And so I worked with him real, real hard. He was 13 months out of the ring after his big fight with Floyd. And he was, you know, out of shape a lot. You know, he was always decent figure. He wasn't young. He was a little older for a boxer. I think he was like 31, 32. So it's getting up there in the boxing world, right? And we just started training. And I trained him. And, man, his work ethic was phenomenal. And he put so much time and energy and effort and passion into the 7 months that we were together. I was just in charge of his physical conditioning and developing his strength and his capacity, along with his mindset, try to repair the mind after, you know, sports psychology type stuff after coming back from one of those defeats. And he had his boxing coaches as well. And then, of course, all the other distractions. So anyways, we got him tuned up. Probably best shape. His words, best shape he's ever been in his life. His coach is, hey man, he looks better than he has in a long time. And I knew that that wasn't even the ceiling, anywhere near the ceiling of where we were going to go together after we get this fight. And so he goes into the ring, Staples Center, and fights Kamagai, Japanese fighter. And it was a brutal slugfest. Phenomenal. It was like, holy cow. And he looked good. He took some heavy, heavy hits, which, well, we're not talking about boxing here, so it doesn't matter. But his conditioning was peak. It was awesome. All that hard work manifested there for a dominating victory. And it's cool, like, to recognize that. I worked so hard. I gave up so much of my family and this and that in order to work to get to where I'm at today. And so then a week later or so, you know, he has to get some time. He's got to get his eye looked at, fixed up from a couple of hits, and the body needs some recovery, you know, going that long in a fight like that, a slugfest. So he recovers, and I'm thinking, okay, it's time to get back to work. You know, let's meet at the ranch. We're in Aromas, Dave Castro's CrossFit Aromas there at his house. It was where we trained, outside of Gilroy. And I'm thinking, hey, we're just going to get loosened up. We're going to do some light work, just get him used to moving again. But let's get moving. Let's just try to, I mean, we're on the peak. Let's just maintain that peak for a little bit, even come down just a tiny bit. That's okay for some recovery. And then imagine where we're going to be at in another 7 months, you know? and let's start digging. And it, with his work ethic and everything like that, but then it, something happened. Now we can talk about other stuff, distractions, big ego, all that other things. It doesn't matter. It's not relative to this conversation, but the point being, he stopped training and it went on for a couple weeks. And then I finally got him training, but then he was only training half-assed and going through the motions and showing up late. And his words were like, hey, you know, I got a lot of other things going on and sometimes I'm going to be late and sometimes I'm not going to feel like training. And I'm like, hey man, like, why can't we just maintain where you're at? We don't have to train as hard. Let's just maintain. It's easier to just to sit here and do what we're doing instead of try to add growth. And that way we're that much ready, more that way we were much more ready for when your next fight comes on. He's like, nah, I'm going to wait until I have a fight booked and then I'll start training camp and then I'll start training again. And it's like, wow. Like, so he would rather do a 7-week training camp when he gets a fight booked. I was like, yeah, that's not what I'm getting paid to do. I feel like I'm stealing from the company and your sponsors because there's an expectation there that you're working. And I report back to them and say, hey, he's working and you're not. So I'm just going to go back and say, hey, I'm not the guy for the job. I'm not going to collect a paycheck for doing nothing. My time's more valuable than getting jerked around. And so I quit that contract with him, or it was mutual and he didn't work. And then he got his ass beat bad fight after fight. And, I just was like, yeah, hey, man, that's a classic example right there. Would have been easier just to keep up than catch up because now he's trying to come back from a hole. He already had it. He already worked so hard and he degraded. He fell down and now he's got to work twice as hard to get back to where he was and to continue to grow. I mean, if you want to be world-class number one at anything, that is not the mindset you have. And so this, we're talking about a world championship boxer. I mean, if that's valid for him, just imagine how much more valid it is for us average folk that are just trying to get through life, you know?
Well, and the thing that I like about, or I gleaned from that is, you know, here he has succeeded. He had a great fight. He won. He's celebrating. And it's really easy to get in that frame of mind that, you know what? I was able to prepare myself for this fight in the 7 months or however long you worked with him. I can do it again. And so, and I think sometimes in retrospect, we think that it really wasn't as hard as it was. And so I think in my mind, I'm interpreting at least how I would feel in maybe the situation where I think, you know what, I'm just going to enjoy, I'm going to bask in this, I enjoy myself and not keep up because I know that I can always catch up because I already did it before. Mm-hmm. But I think mm-hmm. that's cheating yourself. And what you said, I think what I got when you were talking about this on the podcast is, you know, get to this peak, maintain that peak, or maybe, you know, go down a little bit, maintain that peak. But then when you get into your next training regime, you can take it to the next level. You can level up and go to another level, even beyond maybe where you were, the great shape that he was in. He could maybe take that to the next step. And I think that that's
totally
easy,
like
easy trap
why
to get
why
into.
Constantly start I'm sorry I talked over you
no
why constantly start at the ground floor? Yeah. You know, you got up to the 10th floor already, like, okay, hey, let's go back down to the 8th floor, no problem. But now we can put the work in to get back to the 10th floor. You'll get back there quicker and easier, but the goal is the 15th floor. Yeah. For now, and then it's going to be the 20th and then the 25th or whatever the case may be. And it's just, yeah, there's an offshoot. There's a parallel conversation there, like the Napoleon disease or the Victor's disease, right, going on. And there's ego manifesting and other things. So, you know, outside of all of those, when we look at this, okay, fine. But it also, the flip side is true too. So here we are, we're talking from the positive side. But if we flip the coin over and we look at it from the negative side too, where when I'm in the doldrums or I'm down and out and I'm feeling sorry for myself, or, you know, life throws its bad shake at me, it's easy to just be like, oh, well, I'm not going to do these simple little things to maintain where I'm at. I'm just going to give in and I'm going to wait for the 4 months until this hardship goes away. And then I'm going to pick it back up. And it's like, yeah, well, you're just doing the opposite. Instead of staying at the ground floor, you're going into the basement, and you're going farther into the basement when you can say, hey, it's just easier to keep up with the things that I'm doing successful to keep my head above the water. And that might be just, hey, just work out once a day. That just means spend 15 minutes of quality time with whatever, or pick something And even no matter how hard your life is, if you just continue to do those things, keep up with those small little things, you're not going down into that trough as fast or as deep, you know? So it works both sides. We just tend to look at it from the one side. But anyways,
let's take that story that's relevant and important with Robert Guerrero. And let's take another quote that you had in your podcast that said, fighting to rationalize our position in life. So he takes a successful event and realizes or observes that, hey, I went from not ready to supremely ready, and I've already done that. I can do that again. Mm-hmm. And just trying to use that as rationalization that, hey, I don't have to do what Tosh is talking about. It's worked for me before. I'll just sit back and I'll hit go again when it's time. But there are occasions that there isn't another go. There's a chance that we hit that button and it just doesn't start like it used to.
Especially as we get older, right?
Let's take the topic of, you know, hitting the go button and it not responding.
You may never see the eighth floor ever again.
Yeah. You may only have, if you want to get to this 15th floor, you may only have 7 left in you. You better not go back to 0. You better stay at 8 to get to 15.
Yeah, I mean, you can become a self-licking ice cream cone to a certain degree, right? Like, oh, well, I did it before, or I'm this good, or oh, it was that easy, or oh, I'm the champ, but now I don't, you know. True professionals, true, like, the people, the icons in any industry, they keep grinding. And they all say, hey, there's time that where we need to take pause to make sure that we can recharge so that we can keep grinding. But they never say just like, hey, hands in the air, I'm not going to do anything for a while. Right. So pick it, Michael Jordan, you know, pick the greats of the greats across any industry, whether it's sports or business or whatnot. And you just got to keep digging, you know, don't give up. Don't give up your gains, man. Don't give up your gains so easy. You work so hard to get them. Why would you want to give them up? And so I don't know. Yeah. Anyways.
So I've got another one for you as you were just speaking and realizing that as we talk, you know, thoughts are generated. And that's in the very beginning. You said, I'm interested to see where this goes as we just break it open and discuss it. And here's something that came to me as you were speaking, motivation mindset. Boy, I love that term and I love the concept. And there are times that we all feel like we're lacking a little bit of that motivation because that's what wakes us up before the alarm, motivation. That's what drags us to the top of that hill in the middle when we're a bit fatigued and we feel some burn and it feels more comfortable to stop than it does to finish. It's that motivation mindset. How is it that you keep your mindset motivated? How do you turn it back on? Have you? Can you?
Yeah, it gets better and better the more you do it, you know. It gets easier to identify when you're falling out of it, and then it gets harder and harder to do as you become more and more fatigued and you continue to push yourself. So it's like one of those, it's like the assault bike. The harder you ride it, the harder it gets, but you get better at riding it hard because you've experienced it, so then you can ride it a little harder the next time or endure how yucky it feels for a little longer. And I break it back down into small steps. Okay, so a specific example, I've got a guy that I've been talking to, super cool, never met him, he just reached out Instagram. He's getting ready to run the Leadville 100 and he's super stressed out right now, and because he's like 3 days away from doing it, maybe it's this weekend, the mountain bike one was last weekend, whatever. And he's like, hey, what do you tell me, what can you do to tell me? I'm like, hey man, like, because he starts talking about the finish line is so far away and blah blah. I'm like, yeah, wrong goal. Yeah. Your goal is the left foot forward. And then your next goal is the right foot in front of the left foot. And I get it. That's two extremes. You got to have the right extreme. You got to have the end state. You got to have the finish line in your mind. And you also have to have the mentality of left foot first. That's my new goal. And then my new goal. So anywhere in between, depending on how you're, you know, reading your own thermometer, doing well, not doing well, your needs and stuff like that as you're going, that goal is, think of it as a continuum that slides back and forth, back and forth. At times during the race, maybe I can go back out and be like, hey, finish line coming up. I'm motivated. I'm on a roll. You know what I mean? And then at times during the race, that's just so far. And then the negativity starts to fill in and it's like, okay, hey, let's refocus on a different goal so I can continue the positive cycle of goal achievement or goal attainment. And it might be, let's just get to the next checkpoint. We've talked about this on a podcast. Let's just get to the next checkpoint, or let's just get 2 more miles, or let's get to the next telephone pole. And if it comes down to it, hey, maybe it's just, hey, can I just get the right foot forward? okay, cool. Did it. Won. Win. Can I get the left foot forward? Did it. Good. Win. Repeat. Okay. Hey, I'm feeling a little bit better. But that helps you break out of your own head when you can you know, go through that continuum on a slider of resetting the goals to be appropriate for your current mindset. I like to do that.
I think how I break it down, no one asked me, but I'm going to just throw it out there.
hey, Don, how do you break it down, Don?
Thank you, Tasha. You know, I'm a little bit, I'm not prepared to answer this, but go. Thanks for asking. I just try to be present at that time with myself. I don't think about end, and I don't think about start, and I don't think about what mile. How do I feel now? How do I make myself comfortable and adjust my environment, whether it's what I'm wearing or drinking or eating or listening to. I adjust my environment so that I can exist happily. And then I just tell myself, you know what? You've got to do this for the rest of the day. Get to that happy spot and run until there's no sun. And then you get into the night and it's like, I'm going to do this until I see the sun again and just put myself in a spot that I can exist. Because it's pretty hard to keep something very, very difficult, very stressful, very hard and very painful for hours on hours, and then start to do the math in your head and you start to defeat yourself saying, you know what, this isn't possible. I was right. This was not a good choice. But if you can put yourself just present time consciousness, just being there when you're there, I think is a good way. Thanks for asking.
I mean, I think we're saying the same. Oh yeah. I mean, we think the same, you know, we're saying the exact same thing in just different words and articulate it. You know, you're just resetting your goals and, you know, being present is huge, right? And discerning between needs versus wants, allowing a mood to have too much majority vote on the current situation versus getting out of the irrational place rationally, being in the moment. Okay, this is what's going on. This is what I need. This is what I want. Wait a minute. I think this is needed. It's actually a want. Let's put that over in the other category. What do I need? I need to do this. And then, you know, forward and backward are interesting because they're relative to give your present context, but it shouldn't be what drives you. You know, you're not going to make good decisions that way. And we've talked about it on a podcast where I'm always thinking 15 minutes from now, 5 hours from now on these longer courses, like, hey, here I am. I'm jamming. I am kicking ass right now. I'm going back. Boom, boom, boom. How am I going to feel in 15 minutes from now? Okay, cool. How is this pace going to affect me 5 hours from now? Oh, I better auto regulate a little bit. Hey, I'm feeling like crap right now. Or hey, I'm feeling good. Hey, 15 minutes from now, if I eat something, how is that going to change the way I'm perceiving myself or my performance? And so I'm always thinking 15 minutes, 5 hours, because it's relative to the moment and what I should be doing right now. And, you know, and then we layer on needs versus wants, and being able to discern between the two is huge, because a lot of times we find ourselves doing what we want and that is not always 100% transposed onto what we need. It shares a space, but it's not 100% transposed. And the more we succumb to human factors, the farther or the greater the dissonance between the two of those become. And we're humans. We have a natural tendency to drift towards the want versus the need.
Let's put you back in that container, sealed completely.
Oh, I don't want to go back in there, man. I don't want to go back in there.
and so you asked yourself, how am I going to be 5 minutes from now, 15 minutes, 5 hours from now? What did you learn from that experience? And how does that timing that you're talking about regulate or associate with no clock at all, no light at all, nothing but a hum of your feet in the rhythm?
Yeah, that's awesome, because I use the same process in my head. How am I going to be in the future, the near future, and how am I going to be in the far future? Because I had no idea what 5 or 10 or 15 minutes was. And the harder I would try to figure out what 5 minutes was, 10 minutes was, the more and more I'd be off. And then the later throughout the event, the further you were going to be off, the more tired you were, and it's all compounding errors. And it was also something that I'm working on about being present, like relative to what you're doing, you know. And so to live conceptually, whether it's 15 minutes and 5 hours, or if it's 5 minutes and 15 minutes, the theme is reading yourself. What's going on right now? Can I do this for a little bit longer, a lot longer? What's the effect? What's going to be the oh man, the cost. So I would find myself going and I'd feel my heart rate getting higher and higher, my breathing getting heavier and heavier. I'm like, hey, I know I cannot keep this up over the long haul. I could just feel it. You can feel it. Okay. Well, let me just do it for a couple more minutes. Well, why am I so associated with time and minutes? It's some construct that, whether you believe it man created or the cosmos created or whatever, it's just a construct that we constantly do to provide reference against, to give us comfort and meaning, or to keep things organized the way our mind works. Well, I was trying to keep things organized and understand it. And it's getting comfortable outside of these artificial constructs that we use, time being one of them. That's why we did sensory deprivation. And just reading what's happening here. I don't have to measure myself against time. I don't have to measure myself against speed. Can you measure yourself against you? Now, physiologically, that's obvious. We'll insult all the listeners by saying, well, you know, how long can you go without sleep and eating and heart rates and whatever. Okay, hey, cool. We can have that conversation. That's, as we would say, mildly interesting, because we're into this other realm now. How can I measure myself against myself? Am I pushing as hard as I should be? Am I pushing as hard as I could? Do I really want this? Why don't I want it as bad now as I did when I first started? What's going on for me? And using that, the most scariest place you could ever be, how I think, the most scariest place you could ever be is alone with yourself. Right? Man, I stay up at night thinking about, like, how do I measure against myself? And it's so easy to bullshit. It's so easy to bullshit yourself too. But when you just say, hey, okay, hey, don't bullshit yourself. Like, how am I doing? How am I doing right now? Well, compared to what, Tosh? Well, compared to time, compared to, you know, how much weight, compared to Don, how fast is he doing it, compared to the race clock that says I should be, compared to, you know, this person on social media. My mind starts to go there automatically. And it's because I'm scared. It's because I'm scared to really sit down and force myself, how well am I doing against myself? And then when you don't allow yourself to bullshit that, man, you find that you can always go a little longer, a little bit harder, or maybe, you know what I mean? You're not cracking up to everything that you should be as a man. In my case, a man, a father, a husband, or whatever, you know, scariest place you could ever possibly be alone with yourself.
I think about being in that shipping container and the opportunity to practice being with yourself. That would be the extreme and the best environment to do that, because there's nothing there.
All you have is yourself.
All you have are your thoughts. I mean, that's keeping you company. That's your light, is your own thoughts. And so as we're running out there, we can certainly have the sun, the birds, and the competitors and friends, etc., but you're still running in your own head. Most of these things that either motivate us or trip us up, demotivation, are our own thoughts in our own mind. And I think that's what's really fascinating about endurance, is you have to gain this relationship with your own mind and how it relates to your physical body, and just that constant conversation that happens internally, from if there is a central governor and if there is some ego, and if there, I can just imagine all of these conversations happening inside the brain that either propel you or have you search for a rock. And those are the two options,
yeah.
Forward or rock. It's a pretty simple sport, and I've enjoyed both.
Yeah. And being easy for yourself, forgiving yourself too, right? Like, I don't want to turn this into a touchy-feely conversation, but when you find yourself choosing the rock, understanding the conditions that caused you to go there so that you can break through them the next time that the rock is presented, and forgiving yourself, you know, living with grace. So being present and allowing you to pick these other things, and know that you're just pushing yourself not to pick it as soon as you normally would, and you push past. But then when you do choose it, it's like, okay, hey, cool, I choose it. Why did I choose it? What was going on for me when I chose it? And the next time that situation or near situation presents itself, can I just move myself a little bit further down the road before choosing that, and chalk that up as a win? And, you know, forgiveness, that's something that I'm really, really working on. I'd love to just tell the world that I forgive. And it's like, yeah, hey, everybody, yeah, man, it is hard to truly, genuinely forgive others that have done you in wrong, like really wrong. And then, but it's hard to forgive yourself.
Hey, Tosh, I have another takeaway from your Crooked Butterfly podcast, which by now everyone is subscribed to and probably found it's more entertaining than our podcast.
Probably so. Tuned off of this one and yeah. started listening to yours.
Well, Tosh is on this one, so they'll be listening. Hey, the trigger word, good enough. And so when you hear yourself as you're out there to try to complete a workout, and it may be tough, and it may be you're grinding and it's getting hot, you're getting tired, and all the things that are uncomfortable about getting in shape, and you tell yourself, oh, that's good enough. How has that become a trigger word for you?
I have a very, I don't know, like my relationship with that phrase is probably not many people will probably share it, but my career, right? Like good enough. That phrase, that two words, whatever word pairing is responsible for people losing their life. And that's not cool. Good enough. How do you live with that? Yeah. Thinking, okay, I did it. That was good enough. Hey, right on. And then, you know, two people are dead and three people are wounded, four people are wounded. And so anytime I hear myself good enough, like I go into a really dark place. It just gets weird in my head. I'm still wrestling with that, my other issues. So, and I try to use it for good. And I dig. I don't let good enough be the answer. When I find myself saying those things, and in a workout specifically, maybe, or working around the house, manual stuff, and I just like, hey, no, it's not. It's not right. Good enough is not right. Good enough is not delicious. It's not perfect. It's not excellent. Good enough is good enough. Like it's not, that's not my world anymore. I refuse it. And so it'll make me go faster. It'll make me not give up. I won't put my hands on my hips. I won't put my hands on my knees. I won't, you know, take three extra seconds. It's like anytime that creeps into my head, good enough. It's like, boom, that's my immediate trigger to no matter what I'm feeling, I'm fixing it. You know, it could be put my hands on a barbell and rip another rep. It could be take another step. It could be go a little faster. It could be, nope, take a deep breath and remeasure the distance of this piece of wood. Nope, like continue to sand it because it's not perfectly smooth. Like good enough is a trigger for me. And then, you know, going back, it's not to say that I was negligent during that situation either. I was legitimately doing things at my disposal that I could best do to reasonably, you know, mitigate an enemy. And it just happened that, okay, hey, right on, man. Hey, that's good enough, guys. Let's go. It's in my head. I can see it. I can feel it. I can taste it. I can smell the moment when that happened back in Fallujah. And it just there was no negligence there. It just happened to be that word choice and what I communicated and then the results. So I process it now from a healthy place. Through some healing, partially healed, almost healed. I don't know if we'll ever be fully healed, but I'd like to think that there's a place for appropriate enough. Hey, this is appropriate and kind for the current situation, and this is what it's due, and this is what's reasonable. And when I'm having that conversation, it allows me to take ownership and responsibility. It keeps it rational. Good enough is not. It allows for too much room to rationalize yourself out of shit. It's not a good phrase. Hey, I'm gonna stop doing what I'm doing because it's appropriate, or because it's reasonable, or it's because it's due the resources and what that I have that it's worth to invest in. And so that is gonna be where I'm gonna be at. But it's not, I refuse to say good enough. Good enough is a trigger for me. So if I find myself saying, hey, this is appropriate, this is reasonable, this is right, that tells me that I'm thinking and I'm measuring and I'm weighing and I'm considering, and there's a judgment call that I'm willing to take responsibility for. And so what do you do, Tosh? Hey, is that good enough? No, the answer is no, it's not. Hey, is this reasonable for the resources you have, the time, the investment, for the return? Yes, it is. Okay, that's a different conversation. So that's how I separate the two. And it, for me, it's very, very powerful because I have the experience that I have, man. And I'll tell you, you want to get me going, like you're in my box or you're cheering me or you're on the course with me and be like, hey, Tosh, you're doing good enough. Like you watch what happens. You know what I mean? watch what happens, because things are not happening that you'd expect, you know? And I've built that into my milieu. Like, that's just who I am. That's how I'm written now. And I think there's something there for people that doesn't have to be so as extreme or so as intimate as my story. But it's definitely worth pausing to consider whether you want to, like, try to build your own trigger around that conversation, if it's appropriate versus good.
So good enough is on the negative side. Reasonable, considering the circumstances, sounds like, I'm not saying it's a cop-out or a workaround, seems like a sidestep of good enough. Is there ever good, Tosh? Is there ever enough where you would say, that's good? Do you allow yourself
when
to go
good
there?
When good is an acceptable answer. Mm-hmm. Good is an acceptable answer before what you're doing. Hey, that was good. But to me, when I use the word good, that means there's plenty of room for improvement or to do more or to do better. And so I am anal about words. I bastardize the English language all the time. I make up words. I don't use the right words half the time, but I consciously thinking about my word choices and protecting certain words, because words have meaning. And when we start to use certain words for many different things, we dilute the meaning that it's intended for. And good enough happens to be a phrase that I preserve. And I'm not saying that you're a workaround. I'm saying if there is a workaround that involves you to be conscious more about making it a judgment call and being committed and present with the reasons why you're making the judgment call that it's good, so that you can't abdicate yourself from responsibility, then fine, use the word. But for me, it's a trigger. Anytime I say good, like good enough, nope, it's not. The answer is no, no, it's not. Hey, Tosh, is that good enough? Default, no. It's like when you're counting reps and you lose count and say, well, was that 7 or was that 8? Well, the answer clearly is 7.
7.
I refuse to take credit for 8 and then be a thief and steal the world out of truth. Right. So, and you know what? Like, I have a weird relationship with the number 4. Reps 1, 2, 3. I don't know if I say 4 or not, but it's like 5, 6, 7. Shit. Did I skip over 4 again? Or did I count 4? I think, hey, guess what? The answer is just, well, I got to do one more rep because I don't know. And I don't know. And then some doc or someplace probably going to commit me because I think I'm weird. But that's how my head thinks, man.
Good enough. A little related to that and cheating yourself is when you were talking on the podcast about keeping up versus catching up. Sometimes when we fall behind, you went into a discussion that we have a tendency to try to create a shortcut or find a shortcut. We're behind. We need to catch up. And a lot of times, rather than just putting your head down and getting the work done, get to work, is we try to justify that or rationalize that by trying to find a shortcut. Is there a more efficient way for me to catch up? Is there a smarter way for me to catch up? Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I think that's really taken it to the next level of conversation that excites me. And that's it. The people that tend to, in general, I'm not pointing fingers at anybody, but tend to fall behind. They're always looking for a way to just keep up with the Joneses without maybe doing it hard, you know, and it's a slippery slope. When if they would have just kept up in the first place, it wouldn't set them up for an opportunity to fail as a human being in order to cheat, steal, lie, take a shortcut. And obviously that's an extreme. And there's middle ground there where it's much more innocent, right? And I remember where I was having this conversation, my dad was over, my parents were over. I love my parents, love my dad, amazing human beings. I respect them. And but my dad has lost some physical capacity. Yeah, he's getting older, and we all will. But also through some choices and some lack of discipline, or from, you know, temptations that he would rather have instead of what's hard, right? And so we were changing snow tires to summer tires on the car. And it's like he's lost like the ability to really get down and bend over or kneel on the ground to work the monkey wrench or something. So he's lost some capacity. And he decides that he's going to just like put the wrench on the bolt and then use his foot and kick it to try to loosen up the lugs. And then the monkey wrench is flying and it's being in the driveway and bouncing towards the car. And, you know, I'm just like, hey, man, like, well, I just can't get down there anymore. I'm getting old. And all I'm thinking is like, yeah, I get that. I hear you, but don't allow that to be your rationalization for creating a shortcut, because I know that putting a monkey wrench on the car and doing it that way and kicking it is not right. And look at the other things that could happen from doing that. You could scratch the other car. You could chip the thing. You could hit the dog. You could hit me, like whatever, you know, pick something mildly interesting. And then, see, Don, you got me using my mildly interesting too. I'm
aware of it. And we'll dig into that term on another podcast. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. But, I mean, this is a really cool, beautiful, simple, innocent example in our life when, man, I want to keep my diet. I don't want to give in to Twinkies every single night and Oreo cookies every single night and pizza every night. I want to maintain, and I'd rather keep up with my fitness where I'm at today and stay active and keep my capacities now, because I'm already fighting time in Mother Nature where there's going to be some degradation. Well, why stop doing these things that I have control over to accelerate that degradation, you know, and do the best that I can to keep up, keep adding these simple little disciplines to delay that expense, because I don't want to get to that place where we're bending over, kneeling down has to be a consideration all the time, or I'm taking shortcuts. And I mean, and this is a very, very simple example, and I don't want my dad to feel bad. I don't want him to listen to this and think that I'm picking on him. I just see it everywhere, and not even, you know, everywhere in our lives, even in myself. It's like, oh man, I'm falling behind. I'm going so well. I'm just not going to do that. I'm going to skip that step. It doesn't really matter anyways. I'm just going to do this. You know, it's like, oh man, like why? Because I'm in a rush. I'm in a hurry, or because I'm falling behind, or I got so many things to do. And so I think the conversation can go into many different directions from this concept, but just keep up, man. Just keep up with life. Keep up with being a good human being, you know, keep up with these things. And then you don't have to feel bad or have to like have these drastic fixes or changes that require extra energy to try to get back to where you were, man. And awareness, just heightened awareness of it all is helping me just stay on track.
I think that because nature is what it is, and Father or Mother Time does have his or her thumb on gravity, that this is, like you said, inevitable for all of us. So how do we give ourselves grace and allow ourselves to, honor, to decrease and accept that physical performance, that decrease or degradation?
At some point, we can't keep up.
We can't keep up. We can't keep up with our best time ever. You know, we've got to allow ourselves to embrace whatever that time is, providing we have lived with, you know, healthy routines, as you said in that podcast, is where we're certainly on point with our program and not taking shortcuts. As long as we're living the steps, I think it's okay, whatever that final number is as you cross the finish line. But if you look for shortcuts, or if you've tried to stay away from healthy routines, then I think you get to beat yourself up a little bit. But as long as you're on a right program for yourself, I think it's okay.
An appropriate
program.
Or reasonable.
Mm-hmm. That is good. Mm-hmm. It is good. Period.
Mm. Yeah. It goes back to that measurement thing. Why are we measuring against things that don't need to be measured against? Measure against you, you know? And when we start saying, oh, when I start hearing the phrase, well, I'm getting old. Well, that's okay. I'm getting old. Well, now you're just trying to take advantage of that and make an excuse. Hey, we all know we're getting old, so let's just not even talk about it. It's just like you do when you try to simplify equations. You cancel out common things or whatever. So just, hey, we all know we're getting old. We all know age is a part of it. Let's just not even invite it to the conversation. Let's just accept each other and work as hard as you can based off of measuring against your effort and who you are, you know? But we like to do that. I found myself probably as I've started to actually feel and experience and be aware ever more so intimately that the effects of age are having greater and greater effects on me. I'm not recovering as fast as I could. My numbers are significantly down from where they used to be, and it seems like it's degrading on a faster slope or more obvious. You know, or it is more obvious that it's happening. And so I'll use that as my caveat. Oh, well, I'm just getting older. Oh, well, I'm 45 now. Or, oh, well, I had my heyday. Or it's like, hey, take that out of your conversation. Take that out of your language. Who cares? You know, everybody knows. I would much rather say, well, you know, I gave him my all today and that's what I got. Or, man, you know what? Like, I had a little more to give. Damn it. next time I'm going to give a little bit more, you know, and it's just reprogramming. And it's taken the whole hokiness out of sports psychology, you know, and positive self-talk, that how a lot of people that haven't really thought about it and understand it and like internalized it and use it and, you know, have made a living off of selling positive talk and sports psychology, right? Like, cause they're all out there and you can see it, who actually lives it and believes it and, you know, has it, understands it, and who's just regurgitating crap. And I'm finding the people that don't have these other little indicators, they usually are the ones that know what they're talking about or really living what they're talking about. And, you know, rephrase that ramble. It's like, hey, measure against the appropriate things. Let's take the common language of I'm getting old or age or gravity's going to do a gravity. Like, okay, fine. Like, just don't even let it into the conversation. It doesn't matter because we all are aware of it. All it is an opportunity for you to use an excuse to not give a little bit more or to give up a little bit less, or for you to say, well, how am I going to try and cheat Mother Nature and find a shortcut on this? And I'll tell you what, it has never worked. Cheating Mother Nature has never worked for one human being since human beings were human beings. Cheating Mother Nature has never, ever worked for any living creature. And I mean, I haven't been alive for every living creature's life, you know, but I'll tell you what, I'm willing to bet on it. That it's cheating Mother Nature has never worked.
She's undefeated.
Yeah. You might think you bested her on your timeline, but her timeline is so much different than yours, you know? So a win today is an ultimate loss tomorrow.
Well, I think one of the things that plays into this, and if we go full circle here, is as you get older, it's easier to keep up than it is to catch up. I think it means more as you get older. So if you're getting, you know, to the point where, you know, you need to get into 100-mile racing shape and it's been 15 years since your last big race, it's harder for you to catch up and get to that than if you were just to stay at that level.
You see, Tosh, Scott has fully recovered from his trail run because he just brought back in the foundation, the strength of Trail Runner Nation, where he keeps us anchored to the topic.
Yeah. I agree, man. And you know what's funny? The irony is we're all become more aware of it as we get older, and we all wish we would have listened to the older people that were telling us this when we were younger, right? Because if we would have kept up in the beginning when we were younger, we would be further along than where we're at right now when we're older. But we refused to believe it because we were young and we were vigorous and, oh, well, time's not bothering me now. I can just go. And I mean, at least I was, maybe you guys weren't, but yeah, it's funny how that works. Looking back now, I wish I would have listened to the people say, hey, Tosh, you need to do this. It'd be easier to keep up on your flexibility and your stretching or your diet now when you're young, you know, but anyways.
Hey, I have one more quote that I wrote down.
Or your savings account. Oh, just wanted to throw that in there. Yeah. I mean, it relates, yeah. It's easier to keep up than catch up.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a perfect example, man.
Just along that same line, I talked to a guy just the other day, and he said that someone told him when he was in his early 20s, if you can take $20 and put it in an account every week, just take 20 bucks. Everybody can save 20 bucks. 20 bucks every week, put it in an account.
You have 80 bucks at the end of a month.
and by the time you're like 60 years old, you'll have $1 million.
Oh, I thought we could spend it.
With compounded interest.
I thought we could spend it in the first.
Okay, all so right. Here's my last quote. I love this quote, and maybe you can wax on it for a little bit here, Tosh. Our physical world tends to set patterns and habits for our mind. I dictated this while I was running. Our physical world tends to set patterns and habits for the way our mind is going to work. What did you mean by that?
Well, and I wrote that one down.
Did
I wrote that one down too. Yeah.
Yeah, that's deep.
I don't know what I was thinking.
All right.
I'm just trying to think back to the conversation, the podcast. But I do. I think what we live and we experience because we can see it, right? We're affected by it. It's much more tangible. And we're a product of our experiences. It shapes the way that we think. It shapes the way that we interpret. You know, you feel something. I'm wrestling with it. What we do, and we're going to constantly reinforce, right? Like, so we're experiencing something, we're doing something. It's in the physical world, and then we are able to observe or feel or be impacted by the effects of that or the results. And then that's going to shape our thoughts the whole time through the experience itself. Your mind is thinking, right? And then afterwards you're reflecting and it's going to shape your head. And what goes on in there then is going to affect how you tackle the next physical experience, right? And if we continue to do that, what we experience physically is going to constantly affect how we're going to experience it the next time, and because we're building that, we're setting conditions for it. So if I can operate from that baseline, when I'm doing something, I can say, hey man, how I fail physically right now is going to affect how successful I am in the next event. Like it's a once a quitter, always a quitter type of thought process. Or once a quitter, it's always easier. It gets easier and easier to quit. Once you cheat, it gets easier and easier to cheat. Once you steal, it gets easier and easier to steal. Once you do whatever, right? It's like a gateway to just poor performance. So I'm aware of that when I'm out doing things. Like, oh, okay, hey, I could stop right now and sit down, and I'll make the excuse that I need to take the rock out of my shoe or tie my shoe a little bit tighter. And then the next time that I have to stop and sit down, it happens a little sooner. And then I'm always looking for a way when I'm starting to feel these uncomforts physically, and my mind starts to chase, well, what can I do next? What can I do next to ease that physical comfort? And so what we do physically has a tendency to reinforce how we're going to tackle the next set of actions and when. Did that make any sense?
Yeah. And I liked your example of the rock in the shoe. How many times have we taken that boulder out of our rock and found out it's merely, you know, a two times the size of a grain of sand? It wasn't that big. It's kind of disappointing. Or the fact that, yeah, I've got, it's time for me to take a, I love the term bio break. It's time for me to take a pee over there. And you realize your bladder must be now the size of a walnut because there wasn't a lot there. I really didn't have to pee. So I think that those are just two fine examples of how the mind can start embellishing circumstances and situations to try to convince you to find the rock instead of the trail. Just time to sit down. Let's take it easy. And it's time to pee. It's time to take this rock out. It's time to do something. These problems that we experience out there many times are under a magnifying glass, embellished by the brain itself to try to slow us down. So we need to put them in perspective, work through them, and push forward.
Dude, I think you hit the word perfectly right there, embellish. Because that's what we do. We embellish the fact that this is hurting, or we embellish the fact that the rock is the rock and not the sand, or whatever it is. And it's unintentional and it's innocent. It just it happens with a lesser developed or weaker mind, maybe, or whatever the reason. But that's it. And because every time I start to think about, okay, there's a rock in my shoe, I got to take it out, because there's going to be an appropriate time to take that rock out of the shoe, because I'm going to weigh things, right? It's causing chafing, friction, damage, blister, something. At a point, that rock is going to have negative effects on my continued performance, depending on how long I have to perform, right? So, but there's going to be a reasonable time and place when it's okay to, or it's best to take that rock out or investigate the rock. If you're having that conversation, is it the right time to take and stop and do that? But we have a tendency not to have that part of the conversation, especially as we start to get more fatigued or tired. The human dimensions start to affect us more and more. We stop to have the appropriate conversation of, am I embellishing, or is there actually a need right now to do it now? Or can it wait till the next stop? Or can I do three things at the same time and get it all done at once? Or do I do one thing now and then another thing in 20 minutes and another thing in 30 minutes? Well, or is the mind just constantly, instead of the mind being disciplined at the goals at hand and staying focused and determined and processing and reading and scanning and doing these things, or is my mind spending resource to go and find something? I'm actively searching for a reason to be a wimp, really. Let's just say it, right? Like, I'm looking for a reason to stop and retie my shoe. I'm looking for a reason to stop and pee. You know what I mean? Like, and having control of your mind in those two regards, I think it's exceptionally powerful. Not only in what we're talking about in terms of like trail running and all of that and endurance sports, but just in life in general, man, you know, stop allowing the mind to search for a problem, to give you an excuse to be less than what you're supposed to be right now in the moment.
I'm not suggesting that you ignore that rock in the shoe, because that will turn into a blister and you will be sorry that you ignored it. So there are times absolutely to stop and do those things. But what I wanted to communicate, and I think that we did elaborate on it, is in fact these things, the brain is always looking for something, like you said, always searching for some excuse to go ahead and shut it down. And if your motivation side of the brain, if there were two sides, if it's loud enough, it doesn't hear those small things. It doesn't give voice to them. But as soon as your motivation side starts to decrease and become small, then the other side, when it has a weaker voice, actually, can then shout over that motivation side. So in Don's simple world, there's two sides of the brain, a motivation side and some wuss side that you discussed earlier.
A wuss side.
I like that.
And that's it.
I like that.
That's all that's up there.
Yep.
Hey, don't you think it's funny that we took Tosh's 22-minute podcast and we turned an hour into it?
Well, I don't
talking about the same thing.
No, it's probably he was more efficient.
He was more efficient, smarter.
Yeah,
very good.
I don't know about any of that being true. This is great, though. I love the dialogue, man. That's the reason why I do the podcast, is I talk out loud to process, to hear my own thoughts, to hold myself accountable out loud to the world for what I'm thinking, how I'm thinking. And I eagerly invite like conversation and dialogue, because it's how I'm going to either validate it or grow or refine it or be called on my own bullshit, man. And I super enjoy it. I super enjoy being able to process together with you guys.
Hey, Tosh's podcast is called Crooked Butterfly, and I want to put a teaser out there. This is the cliffhanger part of the podcast.
Yeah.
The other, another episode that I listened to this morning on my run was an episode entitled Weak People Suck. It's a tattoo that Tosh has on his back that he got like 12 years ago. And here he is 12 years later, trying to understand what that means. And it's a really great podcast, and you may be offended by the title. Don't be, because once you get into it, it's phenomenal.
I listened to that one too, and I think as part of that cliffhanger, Tosh had no, since it was on his back, he had no idea what size it was.
That's right. That's actually a funny story too.
Oh yeah. God bless those guys.
Hey, Tosh, thank you so much. CrookedButterfly.com is the website, and Crooked Butterfly is the podcast. It's great. Weekly, you publish weekly, so you can have a nice little philosophical run every week with Tosh.
I've done enough of these with you, Scott. I can feel that's a wrap, right? But I want to ask this one last question.
Oh, sorry.
It was not a wrap.
Yeah, it was.
We can edit that. We can move the wrap a little bit later in the podcast. You can do that, can't you?
Yes, certainly.
Is that do you have that ability?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
My abilities are endless when it comes to GarageBand. Hey, so, Tosh.
Do you remember what the question is?
Yes, I do. I'm coming back to it. Tosh, I couldn't imagine sitting down in front of a mic in a dark room or a light room or any room at all and just having a conversation for 20 minutes. Is that just very difficult? The stream of consciousness? I mean, what is it? How much easier is it to sit on a call with three people and just shoot the breeze? If it wasn't for Scott, I think I could do about a 5-minute podcast. I have a sense of just
with 4 minutes of ads,
security, and just I know he's going to come up with something good and redirect us if we go. I mean, I have a lot of comfort with my co-host Scott. How do you just get on a mic and just go after it?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm getting better at it. The more you do it, the more comfortable you feel. I really, really prefer having video. Like I canceled my video to you guys because my internet was going bad, but I see you guys and it's much easier. I feel like I'm having conversation and we're talking, and man, I sit down at my computer and sometimes I'm not even home alone. Like sometimes there's somebody downstairs and I don't see him. I'm in my office and I've got a balcony that goes down and like they're listening to me, but it's weird. It's like, hey, this person's like in my head listening to my private thoughts and I'm sharing, but that's what I'm doing by recording it and putting it on the internet anyways. But man, I'm just sitting here talking and I'm just really trying to hold myself accountable for the words that I'm saying. Like I'm just staring off at something and just talking and actually being intimate and thinking about what I'm saying. And then when I hear myself say something that I don't really, I'm like, man, do I really think that? Do I really believe that? Then why am I saying it? Or if I do really believe that, man, that really sounds messed up, man. Like, I need to correct my thinking because that's ugly. And I know who I want to be, you know, and I want to go that direction. And in order to go that direction or find the right direction to go to where you want to be, you got to know who you are. Otherwise, it's like trying to go to, how am I going to give you the directions to Las Vegas if I don't even know where you're starting from?
You know, Brian.
You know? And so that's what I work on, man.
The thing that I like is sometimes you call yourself out on your podcast. You say something, you go, you know what? I don't know if I believe that. That's what I love about it. Because you're thinking about it as you're talking about it. I like it.
Or you come up with the topic, you go, oh, no, we're not going down that hole yet. That's another episode, but we'll do that one because I've got to think through that. I'm not sure exactly where I stand on that one yet. So with that statement, how many times do you have this podcast rehearsed in your head? How long do you live with a topic on a different run or whatever you're doing out there? To kind of go through the thought process, or is it just pretty spontaneous?
It's a little of both, little everything. There's some things that I'm thinking about and I'm not sure I haven't fully developed, and I feel that there's a responsibility. I feel very strongly about freedom of speech, but I feel that people have taken the word responsible speech, the word responsible, out of that conversation. It's like, hey, everybody can have an opinion, you know, and the world's so full of shitty opinions right now. I don't even know where to even start. So I don't want to be another piece of noise and garbage out there. Some things I'm not ready to personally share. There's some things that haunt me from time to time. Some things have greater intensity than others. And so I think the one that I'm going to record tonight for tomorrow, I'm a little anxious about it. I've been thinking about it. It's been going on for about 2-3 weeks or so. And, you know, it's a conversation that pops up in my head when I'm trying to go to sleep at night, or when I get up in the morning and I'm alone, or when I'm on a run or a hike, or when I'm driving. And it's a different conversation every time I have it, but it has a lot of the same themes, the same questions and the same struggles. And I think, I don't know, man, I think I'm ready to dig into it tonight. We'll see. We'll see where I'm at. Kind of feel safe for this one. Otherwise, I'm going to try to figure something else out.
You know, on our previous podcast, we talked about giving something 15 minutes or giving something 5 minutes or giving a time frame to allow whatever emotion, feeling, issue to have its space and then no more. Period, the end, you're done. Mm-hmm. And so I guess with that preface, my question or comment, Do you take topics and give them their time and put them to bed after you've thought through them? Do you take issues or are they allowed to continuously evolve and change as you go through?
Yeah, both, right? Like, depending on what they are, where I arrive, if I find my mind is just constantly consumed with something, I say, okay, hey, Tosh, like, that's it. You got 5 more minutes to deal with this now. We're moving on. And you can come, you can re-invite it. You can re-invite it for more discussion later, but it's time to put it on pause. You know, there's certain things that have to have that in order for you to get to where you want to go. But if you constantly dwell in something without putting a limit on how long you're going to dwell there, it's not good. Right. So I can put a time limit and say, hey, I'll come back and dwell on it again, or I'll come back and process it again, but no more right now. I need 36 hours before I come and have this conversation. And then it helps me in my head say, okay, hey, cool. Like, I'm not trying to ignore it or forget it. I'm acknowledging that it's there. It's not finished. And then it's easier for me to like let it go in the moment. Hey, because I know I'm gonna come back to it, and I'll write a note on my glass board, or I'll write a note on my index card, or inevitably it'll pop back up into my head when it does. But that frees me from like moods in the moment or temporary weirdness. It's like, okay, hey, Tosh, just you can come back to being a little sissy pants right now, tomorrow afternoon. But we're gonna do a couple things right now, and then inevitably like I'll come back to being a sissy pants, and I'll realize that I wasn't. That I don't need to be as much of a sissy as I was, and I'll get things done and I'm more productive, and that productivity is allowing me to move through my issues. So that's kind of how I'm working through my head in my issues, by giving myself space. And that's the one side of the coin. The side of the coin that we talked about before was, okay, hey, I'm sad right now, or my legs are hurting. And it's like, okay, hey, I'm going to allow myself to think about my legs or my blister for 5 more minutes, and then I'm done with it. And then I'm done with it. So it's like 2 sides of the coin about how I use a time domain to allow me to move through something that's got undue grip on my attention or my mental reserves.
Well, Tosh, as always, we love spending time with you. Yeah. and your thoughts and your concepts and philosophies are enjoyed not only by us, but the people listening. We couldn't encourage people more to go to Crooked Butterfly, wherever you download your podcast, and subscribe to that one, and just crawl inside of Tosh's head and hear how he operates. And you know what you'll find, as Scott and I have found, that much of the same things that are going on in this man's head are going on in our heads. And we share this experience called life, and we have different cards that are dealt, but we still have to play our hands. And we find that there are many patterns, trends that relate to one another. And it's pretty rare for a person in today's world to put themselves out there, allow themselves to be vulnerable for the benefit of others. And you've done that with Crooked Butterfly, to put some of your intimate thoughts, to allow us to hear how you process, so that it will give us a kickstart so we can process them too. And for that, sir, we appreciate it.
Yeah. Good podcast for a run.
Yeah.
Because it makes you think.
Yeah, it's a thinking cast.
Yeah, thinking cast. Thinking cast. Is that a new word?
Tosh says he makes up words, so we can make
you
up
make
words.
It up, man.
All right, Tosh.
Thanks a ton, guys. I appreciate it, man.
Hey, go out and run.
Mas.
Hey, thanks, man.
Tosh, always the best. We love you. You're great.
Yeah, man. You're awesome.